Happy Four Seasons Football Friday. Good afternoon, Saskatchewan. And Rider Nation, welcome to Griffith Stadium in Saskatoon. One more day. Last day of the week for this radio program. Luke Mullender joins me as we talk about day six of Saskatchewan Rough Riders Training Camp 2018. I'm excited that this is our last show before game day, Sunday, Saskatchewan Rough Riders at the Edmonton Eskimos, 3 o'clock on this radio station. Another abbreviated show, 5:30 Scruffy's taking over from the Celebration Zone, one of the biggest games in Pat's histories tonight. Semi-final against Hamilton at the Memorial Cup, and we'll have the call of that at 8. Hours of pregame coverage right here, however. Justin Dunk, though, of 3downnation.com coming up before that, along with the Riders Director of Media, Ryan Pollock. Luke Mullender, on another sunny day, how are you doing?
Good. It was a little bit cold out there today for those sitting and watching practice, but it was football weather for the guys on field. And I thought that they came out, got the work done. Obviously, the focus is going to start to be Sunday's competition. The guys start to figure out how much they'll be playing, where they'll be playing, and things of that nature, which special teams groups they're going to be on and where they fall in those special teams groups. One of the things that these players can do for Sunday in order to give themselves a favorable chance of making this roster, or at least making the first round of cuts, is not screwing up where they fall on special teams. That is one of the biggest, I guess, I've seen it happen plenty of times where rookies who have all sorts of problems, man, they screw up. The guys are waiting for them on special teams. You're getting time count violations and having substitution problems because of special teams. Man, that's the first way to get shipped out if you're a hopeful for any CFL team. You got to know where you fall in the depth chart on specials. It's so important because with these 42-man rosters, guys got to be able to play specials, especially American players. And definitely the backup Canadians.
Well, if you tuned in hoping for some sort of news regarding the roster or who plays when or where, you're not going to get it today. Chris Jones told us that we'll have to wait until tomorrow. The team will have a walkthrough here tomorrow at 9 a.m. at Griffiths, and at that time, I'm anticipating the roster will be disseminated. They won't be handing to the fans the personnel groupings, and it's been, frankly, been years since we've got that. But we'll find out tomorrow, at least, I guess, the quarterbacks. I'm sure we'll find out how much they'll play, the coach will say tomorrow. As he said today, we don't have any secrets. It's just we haven't quite figured this all out yet. We got a lot of players to evaluate. And, Luke, I don't think it's any shock. As he said the other day, it'll be a full plane. Basically, if you're healthy, you're playing. And other than the odd nicks and slight pulls, this has not been a lot of injuries in this training camp.
No, they've gotten through bump free. And again, there's some other teams going through some injury problems, and we talked about the grind that this camp was, and then we referenced some of the other camps, what they're doing. For instance, there's a couple teams out west that went 2 days of 2-hour back-to-back practices, so basically 8 hours of football in 2 days, grinds like that. So the Rough Riders are relatively healthy. I don't imagine you'd see Zach Caleros play if a series, maybe if at all. I like, of course, this is just my opinion. I like maybe giving each quarterback behind Zach a quarter.
So including Bridge?
So having Bridge go one, having then Watford and then Marquise Williams and B.J. Daniels go one. That'd be interesting to see, I think, and just letting Zach hang out and hold the clipboard and make sure everything's going right logistically on the sidelines.
You know, one thing about today's workout, it was at SMF Field. Overcast sky. It was about 24 degrees. Wasn't a bad day. Boy, did we get a dump of rain last night, though. Lightning and thunder show all night long. It was damp, but other than that, good football conditions today. Chris Jones said, Luke, this was the flattest day of training camp from an overall team perspective. And it was funny because I said, well, I was closely watching the receivers. I was taking pictures of all of them. I thought they were decent. And then he said, now, the receivers had a strong day. But other than that, overall as a team, the flattest day, particularly the defense. He said they struggled to play fast today. It's been 6 days of training camp, and I think there's only been one day where Jones, maybe two, day one and yesterday, where Jones was happy with their efforts. Mm-hmm. At what point should we be concerned that they're not hitting optimum efficiency.
Well, I think that you look at this Sunday, and if the product on the field, no matter who's out there, is just – is really struggling, then I think that it'd be something to concern yourself with. Today, yeah, there was a little bit too much of coaches prompting, right, getting from in from period to period. Starting periods was a little bit slow. So I can see where Coach Jones thought it was a little bit flat. But, again, you take the pads off. You got over day five. It's Friday. All of these players have played big-time football, so Friday's normally more of a prep slash assignment check day before a walkthrough. So I think that that plays into players' mentalities, and it must have felt good not to have the pads on after going a few days with them in a row. So as long as the veteran core of this team understands that the pace and the tempo and things need to be different, they should be all right, especially on Sunday.
Here's another one. The fans from home continue to say, how do they look? Who's standing out? One guy that I think we have to talk about, Luke, is Nick Marshall, who has been lining up at that boundary corner position vacated by Casey Rogers opposite Jovan Johnson. He was a quarterback at Auburn. He returned kicks in the National Football League for the Jets and Jaguars, and now he's here in the Canadian Football League as a DB. And whoa. Jones singled him out today, says he, if you noticed, he gets his hands on a lot of balls. He's come up with his share of picks. Nick Marshall, is he a guy that fans need to get
to
learn his name?
We've talked a little bit about Nick Marshall already, not just because he's in the Wildcat formation either. First of all, he wasn't just a quarterback. He was a quarterback that was in the national championship game.
Yep.
Out of the SEC for the Auburn Tigers. He started out as a cornerback in Georgia too, so he's always been that athlete. I think that if you put it on his profile, you put Nick Marshall, position athlete. And that's exactly what he is. Today, for the first time, he was really standing out. He ran with the one group the entire time, knocked a couple balls down. So, he's definitely improving. He's definitely coming along to where they're trusting him to run with that first group because they're obviously looking to solidify that boundary corner spot. But, again, he's played all of the spots in that defense, in that secondary so far. So, I talked to him a little bit today as well, and he understands that he needs to know every position. And it's nice to have a guy like Cresden Butler and to have guys like Ed Ganey around him so they can bring him through this essentially a discovery phase of the Canadian Football League to where he can actually produce potentially for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. I'm excited to watch him play, especially now that he's going to see some different receivers. I'm hoping he sees Darrell Walker, potentially, right? I'm not sure how much Darrell Walker is going to play, for instance, but you'd like him to see some of the better receivers that Edmonton has in order to really gauge how he's coming along.
Well, who knows if he's outperforming Chris Lyles? That would be a question for the coaches, but Chris Lyles started there at the start of the week, and Nick Marshall is there here at the end of the week, and Sunday's game in Edmonton and alignment will kind of tell that tale, particularly not just where they start, but how they play. Who's one name for you, Luke, that might be the front runner for the Terrence Nunn Award for training camp MVP?
For the Terrence Nunn Award, it's Jordan Williams-Lambert right now, number 84. He had another spectacular day today. I was talking earlier on Twitter. I really like Jordan Williams-Lambert's camp to the camp that Antoine Grant had last year. If you recall last year, Rod, Antoine Grant was catching everything. He was always getting open. He seemed really comfortable with what they were asking him to do within the playbook. And Williams-Lambert looks the same in this camp. And, again, he's making plays. He's all over the field. He's getting down for balls. He's getting up for footballs. So he's a guy right now that I think has a lot of momentum moving into Sunday and could potentially not just take home the Terrence Nunn Award but be on this roster in some way, shape, or form when 2018 really kicks off.
Well, you can fire the questions at us. We love that the most. That way we can tell that we're giving you the information you want. Prairie Mobile text line 551-CKRM, 551-2576 to reach us right in the booth here at Griffith Stadium in Saskatoon, or write us on the Coors Light Twitter feed at Rod Peterson. Right now, find one of four stainless steel silver bullet koozies in select 24-can cases of Coors Light. That's the opening drive of this Four Seasons Football Friday. Back with more after this timeout on Rider Radio 620 CKRM. Boston Pizza afternoon rush time on this Football Friday. One of the biggest games in Regina Pats history is tonight. They take on the Hamilton Bulldogs in a Memorial Cup semifinal in the Brandt Center, 8 o'clock. On this radio station, we'll have pregame coverage from 5:30 up until 8, right here on the Mighty 620. The winner advances to face Acadie Bathurst in Sunday's final at the Brandt. Glenn Gullitson coached against Todd McClellan for 7 seasons in the NHL, including the last 2 with the Flames. Now he'll coach alongside him on the other side of the Battle of Alberta. The Oilers announced today that Gullitson's joining McClellan's staff as an assistant, along with Trent Yanni and Manny Viveros. Manny announcing his resignation in swift current this morning after leading the Broncos to the WHL title. And the Blue Jays kick off a 3-game interleague series tonight against the Phillies in Philadelphia. Sam Gigliano gets the start for Toronto. He pitched 5 1/3 scoreless innings against Oakland last week in his first Blue Jays start. That's the Boston Pizza afternoon rush. Try Boston Pizza's 5 new thin crust pizzas like the Skinny Carnivore with smoked prosciutto and Genoa salami. Thin crust creations at Boston Pizza gather around. Scruffy asked a good question. He said to me, are you going to be jumping in the car and racing to Regina for the hockey game tonight? No, I'm not. Those are the kinds of things that make life difficult and hard. I'll be following from Saskatoon, wearing my Pats gear. Go Pats, go. But I don't need to be there for it. Prairie Mobile text line, Ryan from Regina writes in, Luke, says, I haven't heard a lot about the linebackers. How do they look, especially the Canadians?
The Canadian linebackers, not much has changed. Again, my whole thing about the Canadian linebackers, we talked about it, I think, 3 shows ago, is how they are able to cover football players, guys coming out of the backfield, because when you're playing defense in the CFL, especially when you're looking at it from an offensive perspective, I mean, offenses try to create those mismatches, get those running back slash slots on these one-on-one matchups with linebackers. So I think that every one of the running linebackers in camp so far physically is up to the task of helping out in the run. It's just been coverage. So look out on 2nd and 5 plus situations here on Sunday and watch guys like Cameron Judge, watch guys like Alexander Chevrier, Micah Tights, Dylan Grondin, Sam Hurl, because I think that is going to separate guys who are on the roster at some point or in some phase and guys who aren't. All of these guys are going to be able to contribute on special teams. I would expect Cameron Judge to, as a matter of fact, stand out on special teams. A guy like Micah Tights needs to cut his teeth on special teams. So watch these Canadian linebackers in coverage, because that might give you a good inclination of who has a good chance to be that designated starter. Or one of the thought processes, too, might be, say, hey, what do we want to do with these Canadian linebackers? Do we want to make them Wills? Do we want to make them Mikes? Again, there hasn't been anybody from that Canadian standpoint that's really taken the reins, right? They've all had decent camps, but there hasn't
Kevin
been
Kevin Francis
guy.
Might have, but he's hurt.
I was so excited about Kevin Francis' prospects this year. I was so excited about it. I really thought that he was going to be the guy after camp was done, and unfortunately, he was injured. But that just opens the door, and it opens more reps and opportunity for someone else.
John in Winnipeg writes in, Luke, on the Prairie Mobile text line. He says, Rod, the disrespect you, Luke, and the media show the Bombers is just too much to take. It's unforgivable. The Bombers have the strongest roster in the CFL. Mm. That's John from Winnipeg who says we're disrespecting them too much. I'll take this one, Luke. Well, John, respect is earned.
Just listen to Arash Madani yesterday.
End of story.
When's the last time the Bombers had a playoff win?
2011.
We're so tired of hearing about the Bombers preseason, and then when the Bombers get into the regular season, all of a sudden, Who was that, John?
Yeah.
Does he not remember what that playoff game looked like last year? That was an abortion.
They were abysmal.
They were terrible, and it was. You want to know disrespectful to the fans that continually come out there? That sometimes there's not a better product put on the field, but that's not on us. I'm pulling for the Bombers, man.
So am I.
Yeah, I want the Bombers to be competitive because I want that whole Western Division to be the dogfight that it's known to be. Yeah. So if any one team falls out of that race, that's not a good thing.
What have they done to earn it? Nothing. Here's a good one in the 2 minutes we have left in this segment from Chris in Regina. He says, although I expect Caleros to be the starter this year, besides him being a veteran, how has he separated himself from Bridge in camp? I mean, Bridge won more games than Caleros last year. This is a big year for these two quarterbacks. Only one will be here in 2019. I'll say this. There hasn't been a ton of separation between the two. Zach is not head and shoulders above the other guy or the other way around. That's the way I see it, and that's without seeing any stats.
I think that's a testament to Brandon Bridge, too, that none of these quarterbacks are really stepping out and grabbing the reins, just like that middle line or the Canadian linebacker position we just talked about. Zach Kolaros is incredibly poised in the pocket. You understand the depth of his IQ when you watch him. You look at him as a guy that can make every single throw on the field and make it accurately. That's the thing I like about Zach Kolaros is his ability to be accurate with any throw on this field. But Brandon Bridges had a good camp. It's been up and down just like every other quarterback, but he's made some plays. He ran with the ones today. Again, it was a flat practice for everybody, so you can't put non-productivity from an offense on one player, obviously. But, again, it's a battle that's going to consistently play out, and that's exactly what you want. I think that the Saskatchewan Roughriders and Chris Jones would be kind of worried if Zach Kolaros right now was so far ahead of the pack that it wasn't a question. That's what you want is you want a battle.
Justin Dunk joins us after this break. It's Four Seasons Football Friday, live from Rider Training Camp in Saskatoon on 620 CKRM. We are back in Saskatoon. Day 6 of Saskatchewan Rough Riders Training Camp has wrapped up. We're on the air for another hour before making way for the Memorial Cup pregame show on this Football Friday with Scruffy and the crew. Justin Dunk, we're getting loaded up on the Wheaton Kia hotline. Marky Marks dialing them up now. Riders at the Eskimos Sunday at 3. We'll be on the air with a pregame show at noon. Luke Mullender, you've been surfing a lot of news across the CFL. What are they saying about the opponent Sunday, the Edmonton Eskimos?
Well, they're all set at middle line, Will linebacker with Adam Konar. I was just reading an article. Another interesting signing as of recently, Toronto Argonauts signing Kyrie Robinson, formerly of the Saints. That kid's got all the talent in the world. I know there's a lot of people hoping that he would have worked out in New Orleans. So, again, the rich get richer.
Yes, but James Wilder's there, of course, and picked by many to be the most outstanding player in the CFL this season. That came from the CFL media poll. He was the rookie of the year last year, won it in half a season. Are you going along with that he'll be the most outstanding player this year?
No. I'm going along with the fact that the most outstanding player, period, is playing in Edmonton at quarterback. So that'll always be my vote. Straight up.
Yeah.
I mean, Wilder's good, but there's no discounting Mike Riley, ever. And I'm shocked that the media that took that poll would have said otherwise. Where was Mike Riley?
I'd have to go back and look.
Better have been at least number two.
I'd have to go back and look. But the thing that I liked the best was that, again, we covered this yesterday, Zach Kolaros, the runaway winner, predicted to be the comeback player in the CFL. Quite frankly, I don't know who else is trying to come back. He's the story. Other than Johnny Manziel, to be honest, maybe he'll be the comeback player of the year.
I think he's a story in Rider Nation. I know that every other team has their own.
Yeah.
I know Winnipeg is.
We're coming back in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We were just talking about potential comeback players. I think everybody has guys that they're the reason I think that Zach Kolaros obviously ran away with that comeback player of the year prediction is because he's got the best chance to succeed. He's got the tools around him to succeed. And I think that obviously a guy who touches the ball every single snap, offensive snap, other than the center, he's in good shape to have a good year. He's got some monsters to throw to. He's got a couple good backs, it looks like, that are going to run the rock for him. It all depends on how that offensive line shapes up. And to be honest, I'm kind of liking the direction they're headed. I really am. Now that I've had a chance to watch Terron Vaughn for a while, I think that he fits in there. I think he's got the guys around him that are going to set him up to succeed. Again, it's about consistency for him. I'm hoping that Terron Vaughn literally plays the whole game on Sunday, just so they have just a very, very big body of work to look at. I know there's a couple more guys there. Number 58 was playing left tackle as well today to Kobe Cofield because Thad Coleman wasn't at the right tackle spot today. So there's going to be other guys that are getting reps, but I really would like to see a number of reps for Terron Vaughn there on Sunday.
Let's go out on the Wheaton Kia hotline right now. Justin Dunk from 3downnation.com joins us. And Justin, I'm sure you were polled as part of the CFL media poll, as was I. How did you feel about the results of it where we were released yesterday? It's been a hot topic in the CFL.
Oh, it certainly has, guys. I'm going to say this, and I don't mean this as a shot at any media member, but, and I'm guilty of it too, I feel like we always go with the easy pick for stuff like who's going to win the Grey Cup, right? Everyone looks at the Eskimos and Mike Riley being the MOP last year, and they had all the injuries, sort of pick Edmonton to win the Grey Cup. But as we know, the last couple years with Ottawa and Toronto, those teams have come out of nowhere. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm going to predict a team to come out of nowhere, but I just feel like it's always kind of the obvious that come out of these polls a lot of times. What do you guys think?
Yeah, but I think Luke's does not disagreeing that the Eskimos might win the Grey Cup, right? They're your favorite in the West. Your predictions are coming out, actually, aren't they?
Yeah, whenever you have the best player in the league quarterbacking your team, you're going to be in a good position to win. I just think that for their record last year and the amount of injuries that they had to still make the push that they made throughout the year was pretty impressive. And I'm looking forward to the 2018 version of the Edmonton Eskimos. I think that a lot of people, especially the media, discount coaching. And I think that that's why you see the what Justin refers to as the easy picks, because those are players, right? I think that it shouldn't have surprised anybody that the Argos came out of nowhere, because it was Mark Trestman coaching them, right? It shouldn't surprise anybody this year when Hamilton's really, really good. Why? Because June Jones is their coach. So I think that maybe there may be some detail things in there. And, again, I think that for the most part, CFL media just doesn't do a good job of accounting for the actual coaching that these players are getting.
Speaking of, though, that's a great topic. Justin, I was stunned. Chris Jones didn't rate in the top three coaches you'd want leading your CFL franchise. They were Mark Trestman, Dave Dickinson, and Wally Buono.
I would say the same. I don't understand how you don't have a coach in there that won the Grey Cup in 2015 and has come and already made the Riders a playoff team in, you know, essentially one season, right? They had the first year there under him where they kind of got everything figured out. We're in the East Final last year. And a lot of people talking about the Riders being a legitimate Grey Cup contender this year, and Jones doesn't rank in the top three. To me, I would have him in there for sure, and I was surprised to see that he wasn't in there based off all the results.
Hey, Justin, to me, I was talking with Rod about this yesterday. To me, the reason why he wasn't in there is because he was a tougher interview, right? Do you get the impression that sometimes, especially with a media poll like this, that the fact that a coach maybe isn't as forthcoming in interviews might sway those decisions?
That's certainly possible, but I feel like a lot of people might say that Mark Trestman is a tough interview, right? And if anyone was on the season preview conference call for the Argos this year, he was asked a question essentially about, you know, is there a competition for being a starting quarterback, and he didn't hold back on the reporter that asked it and essentially said it was disrespectful. So I believe I'm with you, Luke. I feel like there is something to that a lot of times, you know, media darlings, so to speak, get bumped up the rankings. But to me, you know, Trestman being at the top of that poll, he's not always the easiest guy to interview either, because he does speak his mind, which is what we want.
If there was a question as to who's the number one story in the CFL, it would be an easy one, Justin, right now. That's Johnny Manziel. Are you down there at Ty Cats camp? Are you covering it? Or has TSN covered it all, going live 24-7?
Well, I'm surprised we don't have a 24/7 Johnny Manziel Ticats came on Ticats.ca, but maybe we'll see that. Yeah, I've been down there, you know, a number of times. I'll be back down there this weekend, and the sense around Manziel is that he's picking up this game pretty quickly. Now, we'll get a real idea of that when we get to the preseason games and then obviously potentially the regular season if and when he becomes the starter. But that seems to be the sense right now, is that Manziel has put his nose to the grindstone, is picking up the CFL game, you know, about as quick as you could ask him to, and has really endeared himself, I would say, to this point, to the city of Hamilton and the media, because he's given every single interview and time possible, signed a ton of autographs after every practice. So he's really winning the PR battle right now.
Well, I have had not a lot to do in Saskatoon other than come to training camp or sit in my hotel and watch SportsCenter, to be honest with you. And there's so much Manziel coverage there. And to be honest, I'm kind of sitting there going, they're inviting a circus in Hamilton with Manziel. And they knew, Justin, they were going to get in. They're going to get that with Manziel. And the two perfect guys to manage that are Eric Tillman and June Jones. But when does it become, if he's really charming the Steel City to the degree that you're saying, the fans want him behind center, and they've got no choice but to put him back there, even if he's not ready?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to put him there if he's not ready, but the problem will be, especially if you look at the Ticats schedule, they start off with five straight West Division opponents plus a bye week in there. And to my knowledge, the Ticats were only able to beat one West Division team last season, and that was a BC Lions, you know, kind of towards the end of the season when the Ticats were hot. So if the Ticats have that Alberta double off the top, they have to be, you know, in Calgary and in Edmonton, and they kind of go 0-2 or 0-3, heaven forbid, or 1-4, kind of in that stretch, everyone and their mother is going to be calling for Johnny Manziel to play. And let's face it, guys, that's ultimately the reason that he is here. For the buzz that he has created as right now, you know, a backup quarterback, it's insane to think that we're going to go the entire season possibly without seeing Manziel as a starter.
Let's switch gears a little bit. There's another quarterback battle going on, or maybe not going on at this point, Justin. What are you hearing out of the Montreal Alouettes camp? Apparently, from what we've been reading, Josh Freeman's now at number four. I don't think he was ever going to work out there anyways, but what are you hearing out of the Alouettes camp?
Certainly nothing favorable from Josh Freeman. It seems like he's going to be well down the depth chart. And, you know, I try to say that as nicely as possible, fellas. It's a two-man race between Matt Schultz and Drew Willey. And from what we've seen of Drew Willey in recent years, and you guys will know the potential that people saw in him all the way back from when he was a Rider, it doesn't seem like, and I've talked to some players about this too that have played with him that were actually in the huddle with him, that felt like Willey sort of, you know, had the willies, for lack of a better word, in the huddle, that he was a little antsy, especially after the injuries and that one big concussion that he suffered in Winnipeg. So the fact that Montreal is pinning their hopes on one of those two players, and there's still obviously something to be seen out of Matthew Schultz. He was thrown into a game last season at the end of the year when the Alouettes were just totally going in the opposite direction. So maybe there's something there that we haven't seen with Schultz. But the fact to me that they couldn't upgrade this quarterback situation in the off season is probably going to continue to be a sore spot for the Alouettes when they get in the regular season.
Lastly, Justin, what do you got cooking at 3downnation.com this weekend for our fans and readers?
So, boys, just a couple things I'll hit on, try to quickly. Mark Chapman, the number one overall pick, is not in Ticats training camp. You guys know what that was like a couple years ago when Josiah St. John went through that whole deal, and then he ended up signing. So Chapman right now is not in camp. We have a story up on that, and we'll be tracking that situation. And I was working on a piece today. It should be out over the weekend on, speaking of Manziel, the Manziel-Masoli contract numbers and how that could factor into some quarterback flexibility for the Ticats, and ultimately the Ticats really not having to be pinned to either guy based on their salary. So look for that on 3Down over the weekend, and as I said, we'll track the Mark Chapman holdout situation.
Good stuff, Justin. As always, great talking to you. Enjoy Sunday's game, and we'll catch up with you next week.
You bet, guys. Have a good one.
Justin Dunk from 3downnation.com on the Wheaton Kia hotline. Wheaton Kia, who won't rush you into anything. Your pace is the right pace. Visit WheatonKia.ca. We'll be back in a moment here in Saskatoon on a Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM. RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker from Ryder Camp. Memorial Cup semifinal time tonight, 8 o'clock in the Brent Center. Your Regina Pats up against the Hamilton Bulldogs. The winner advances to Sunday's final against the Acadie Bathurst Titans. The Pats chasing their fourth Memorial Cup in franchise history. Former Flames head coach Glenn Gullitson's joining the Oilers staff as an assistant. The Oilers announced that Trent Yanni and Manny Vivros have also been hired as assistant coaches under head coach Todd McClellan. The Toronto Blue Jays are in Philadelphia tonight to start a three-game series with the Phillies. The Jays will likely enjoy a change of scenery after going 1-6 on a recent homestand. Sam Gavilio gets the start for Toronto. And Houston's Chris Paul will miss Game 6 of the NBA Western Conference Finals against the Golden State Warriors on Saturday because of a hamstring pull. He was injured in the fourth quarter of Houston's win over the Warriors last night. Tonight, the Boston Celtics take a 3-2 series lead into Game 6 at Cleveland. That's the RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker. Save up to 20% off MSRP on select vehicles and enter to win Metallica tickets during Mega Metal May at Regina Motor Products. I'm sure Justin Dunk was wondering what we were at hearing the crowd roar here at Griffith Stadium. It's again teeming with high school track athletes, but we haven't had any action for a while.
They've just been hanging out on the field, sitting around. We got some people here practicing their relay handoff, so that looks like it's on deck. But for the most part, nobody's even stretching, and that's not something we're used to. We're not seeing used to seeing track athletes not stretching or warming up in some phase.
Spend more time stretching than they do competing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they'll stretch for an hour, go race for 10 seconds, and call it a day.
But the field, like I say, is currently teeming with athletes. And the stands are packed. If there's one thing we've learned, Saskatoon's a huge track town. It's also, by the way, a huge lacrosse town. Tomorrow night, Game 1, National Lacrosse League Championship Final. The Saskatchewan Rush, who were out at Ryder practice today, by the way, hosting the Rochester Nighthawks. Luke, I've got tickets for us, by the way. Can't wait to see you down there. It's going to be a blast tomorrow. Now, Justin Dunk gave us lots of tidbits to gnaw on. And he mentioned Mark Chapman, the number one overall pick in this year's CFL draft by Hamilton, receiver, is holding out. That's a topic in and of itself. But Josiah St. John held out 2 years ago, as you recall, here in Ryderville. And he hasn't participated in this camp yet because of an injury. So your take on Josiah St. John as we sit here 1 week into training camp.
I'm disappointed. I truly am, and I'm not disappointed in him. I'm just disappointed that he doesn't get to come out here and compete because of his injury. I talked to him a little bit. He was excited. He's obviously upset about not being able to compete, but this was a really big year for Josiah St. John, and it's truly disappointing to have a guy work as hard as I know you have to work in the offseason, watch as much film as you have to watch, and then, unfortunately, not be able to participate out there with your homeboys. It's truly the worst experience in the world. I got injured at one point during camp. I only missed maybe two practices, but literally the two practices I missed felt like 3 months. It felt like you were isolated. It felt like you weren't part of the group. So I can't imagine what Josiah is going through right now. There's some guys getting better, though. Today I watched Darius Bladick. Hey, Darius Bladick, he was struggling a little bit when they threw him in at center here a few days ago. He's starting to get better. And that's, I think we should mention that because I know people like out there want to know about how Darius is doing. But the snaps are starting to come a little bit cleaner now, back to the quarterback. He's moving with more confidence. You can tell he understands. Again, I'll quote Brendan Labatt because Brendan said it the best, and you mentioned it too. The game gets harder and faster the closer you get to the football for an offensive lineman, right? There's so much more responsibility involved at being a center than you would being a right guard. you're literally responsible for pointing out blocking responsibilities, setting the mic or setting wherever the offensive scheme is based. You got to point out a ton of things. You got to make sure the ball is getting back there. So, but it was really nice to see Darius Bladek starting to get those snaps back there cleaner and crisper. Overall, though, yes, truly disappointing so far for Josiah St. John. Hopefully he can get out here next week, and still, because if he does get out there this week, next week, he's still got a very long time to compete before that second exhibition game.
Darius said, by the way, hey, this is only my second day snapping the football. I'm getting better. So cool it. And as one of the coaches said to me today, he's still going to be the sixth guy. Who else is it going to be? So he's just got to work on those snaps. He's a talented, smart young guy. He'll figure it out. By the way, James in Regina, holy typical Rider fan, Batman, with this text, Luke. He says, what if Brandon Bridge finishes camp really strong and ultimately then claims the job at quarterback? It's more than a possibility, boys. We then pay Zach Kolaros a whole bunch of cash to back up Air Canada. It ain't happening. Zach is either number one or he's on his way out. From James. Holy smokes, man. Go for a walk. That's Go fun. Do something. Just wait for the preseason to finish before. What if? What if? What if? Let's just see how it all plays out.
I mean, at the end of his text, too, I mean, that scenario makes sense. If your quarterback that you're paying a lot of money is not the best quarterback at the end of the day, you should release him. I mean, some teams do that. Here's the thing, though. Right now, there's not really anything separating any quarterback. And I think that there's been some really good things that Zach has done here in camp that a lot of people don't see when it just comes to throwing the football to receivers and gaining first downs. So, again, Zach's approach, very cerebral. Brandon Bridges' approach to camp, I think, honestly, he should be really happy with his performance thus far. I really do. Again, he hasn't necessarily jumped out and taken Zach Kolaros' spot, but, man, he's been playing well. And, again, his whole thing was to build into his football IQ. So it's a big opportunity coming up here. Live action.
Hour two coming up from Saskatoon after the news. It's Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM. That's right. We are the place to be every day, but particularly today. It's Four Seasons Football Friday. Going to be closing our portion talking football. The biggest game for the Regina Pats in a very long time. In a generation is tonight, the semifinal of the Memorial Cup. They'll take on the Hamilton Bulldogs at 8. We'll have the broadcast there. Luke and I will be on the air here from Saskatoon until 5:30. Then Scruffy takes over with that pregame show there. It is Four Seasons Football Friday, and we'll get back to your questions and comments in a minute coming in for the Prairie Mobile text line and the Coors Light Twitter feed. But the Rough Riders Director of Media, Ryan Pollock, joins us here in the broadcast booth. And I do have people, Paulie, texting in saying, can you please give your thoughts on hockey? So you're the perfect guy to ask about that. You're not jumping in your car and racing to Regina tonight, like Scruffy suggested I might want to.
There, I can't lie. There was some thoughts about it. But, no, I've got too much to do with the game coming up in a couple days here. But, no, it would have been nice to be there and see that atmosphere. And I think you're right. This is probably the biggest game since 2001, the last time they were in this exact same position. So hopefully they can close the deal out tonight.
You did drive down, though, Wednesday. You're a Regina guy. Can you please tell me what the vibe was in the building against Swift? Because I wasn't there.
Yeah, atmosphere Wednesday night was incredible. As soon as the schedule came out and I knew it was going to be Regina and Swift that Wednesday night, I made a point of making sure I could get back for it, and it didn't disappoint at all. What a hugely entertaining game. Crowd from both sides just made the place real electric. It was a real fun atmosphere to be at, and the back and forth type of game made it a real entertaining one.
What's your take on this game tonight? Pats against Hamilton. So they beat them once 1 week ago tonight. I believe it was 6-5. Do you think they can do it again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they can. The one thing, I don't think it was the best game for either team to open the tournament there. It was kind of a sloppy game at times, I found. And, Paddock had an outstanding night and was probably the best player for both teams that night for my dollar. But I think they absolutely have a chance. The Thomas kid for them is unbelievable. you know, to me, Sam Steele has returned to the Sam Steele that we've all been able to watch over the last few years. And if he continues to play like he's played the last two games and absolutely dictate the pace of the game and dictate the way the Pats are going to play in that up and down style, they're going to be real hard to contend with tonight. And obviously that home side crowd is going to be, it's going to be jumping in there.
Well, there's a Titans player that's leading the tournament in scoring, but from everybody I've talked to, Sam Steele will probably win tournament MVP. It may depend on how the games go tonight. So I think I can speak for you in saying everybody going to that game tonight, enjoy it and be sure to savor every second because we wish we were there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a real, real good one to be at. And, we wish we were there, but we'll have it on TV tonight and we'll be watching every minute of it. From the Brandt there, and it's going to be a great atmosphere. I'm sure it's going to come through the TV as well. So when we watched the games the first couple times, it was pretty awesome in our dorm room here too. We were a little loud when they were scoring goals, and we're right into it. So we wish them all the best, and hopefully they continue on and can take on a big final on Sunday.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Rusher home tomorrow night to the Rochester Nighthawks, game one of the Champions Cup League final. If anybody's listening, you're in the area, come on up to SaskTel Center. We'll be there for that game too. Ryan Pollock with us from the Riders through 6 days of training camp. It's been a pretty typical Chris Jones camp, very physical, a grind. The weather's been perfect. From your perspective, you've been through what? This is seven now?
Seven, yeah.
What's your take on this camp?
Yeah, I think you hit it right on. I think it's been, a typical Chris Jones, what we would have expected. But to me, the most impressive thing has just been the overall speed day in and day out. And I think you get that when you have a veteran group. Obviously, we have a bunch of guys that have been through it, on this team, but guys that have come in from other teams that are league veterans and know what to expect. But to me, it's been overall real crisp. Each day has been, the pace has been unbelievable, and that's Jonesy's thing. But then to add in those guys that know how to move around the field and the depth just out there on the field, and it's been quite impressive.
You've seen this rebuild from the ground up, 2016 till now under Jones. Have you enjoyed you're watching from the inside. It's different from everybody else, but do you see the progression? Have you enjoyed the progression? And what are the expectations this year internally?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I see the progression. There's no doubt about it. And we see what's, together on paper, and we all know that you got to go out and deliver after that. But, it's been great to see these guys come through, and some of them as relative unknowns that have been here now for two or three years and have become big parts of our team. So I'm excited for it. I think expectations are high internally, and we know that expectations are high externally, but that's okay. And we're looking forward to getting this thing going on Sunday and seeing where we can continue to grow to.
Ryan, I talked to a couple of the guys, the equipment guys, and they remarked about how good this group is to deal with. And it was surprising, right? There was nobody out there losing their mind. There's nobody trying to big boy guys. Do you notice the same thing? And how well does that play in terms of setting that sort of culture in the locker room?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things over the past couple of years that has been able to continue to develop. When you start to get those core guys and they know the expectations and know how to deal with different people. And truth be told, the equipment guys and the medical team and even myself, you get to see the players when maybe they're not at their finest, if you will, maybe doing some things that they don't want to do, or not the most pretty things that they have to do as part of their job. And but it's been a real easy pleasure to deal with these guys that they know how to be pros. They know the expectations. They know how to handle themselves, and especially in our market where there's a lot of attention and a lot of eyes, and we can see it every day at practice. And today, how many kids and people were along the fence wanting to talk to players post practice, and we had 30 or 40 guys go over and say hi to every kid along there from the school. So I think that comes with our culture. Guys that have been here for a long time have helped set that culture, and guys that have come in over the past couple of years have been able to help grow that culture. So it's been a real, real good group, and I think that when they get tight like that and hold each other accountable, that's when you get the best out of each player.
I love that point by Luke, and he'd been saying all winter that he would kind of like to see the Riders be the nasty boys, the old Oakland Raiders, kick down your door, steal your women kind of guys, and they can still be that, but they don't have to be jerks, and they're not jerks. You know, like Charleston Hughes, Willie Jefferson, these kind of guys are, I guess what I'm getting to, very easy to cheer for, right?
No, 100%. I 100% agree with you. I think once they walk off the sidelines, it's a good group, and they're fun, and there's some characters there. There's no doubt about that. But when those lights come on and they put the helmet on, they need to go do their thing, and we definitely have guys like that that are willing to step out there and dictate a game.
Anything that our listeners should know about Sunday's game, Ryan, at the Edmonton Eskimos?
Well, I think like any preseason game, it'd be wise to visit Ryderville.com and get yourself a roster. It's going to be a full roster. I'm actually just going to start putting together the media side depth charts tonight, but we'll be going with a full plane, like Jonesy said the other day. But it'll be exciting. There's some good young guys that we've seen come through mini camp and now through training camp and that. So it'll be exciting to see them get on the field, and there'll be a mix of some well-known veterans too on the field. So you know, grab the roster and enjoy the game.
Well, another thing too, 2016 started this rebuild. They couldn't have played a game a week into training camp. They wouldn't have been capable of doing it. It shows you how veteran this team is.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Just even coming in and getting used to the way, you know, Chris Jones runs a practice, runs a training camp. The pace is off the charts, and it's a story we've been talking about for 3 years. But if you haven't seen it, it truly is remarkable. And the pace that they go through each day of practice, everyone feels like we've been cutting practice short the last 2 days. But I guarantee if you put your cleats on and went and ran as much as they do and went up the field as much, the players don't feel like they've cut practice down. It's the pace that continues to increase, and you push and push and push, and you put in your work and you get off. But I think you're right. It's a credit to how the players have moved around the field the first week. And you know, getting out there and playing 7 days into camp is a pretty cool thing, and I know our coaching staff and players are excited to get there.
After 7 or 8 years of this, how do you continue to come out here and keep this experience fresh, right? How do you stay locked in and zeroed in? Because, you know, behind the scenes, I mean, that's a tough job to manage media expectations and things like that, and I would think that after a few years, right, you have risk to maybe approach it as, oh, man, not this same old thing. But you really don't carry yourself that way. You still look like you're having fun out here.
Yeah, I always try to make it fun. I enjoy my job. I enjoy being around here. The good thing about it is no day is the same. And you get through the processes, and I'm pretty comfortable with the way, you know, things run day in and day out, but no day is the same, and there's always different things pop up, whether it's transactions or news around the league or what have you. So there's always something that can pop up and keep you on your toes right away. But this is who I am, Luke. Like, this is I've told people all the time, I couldn't put on a tie and go sit in an office for the rest of my life. I enjoy being around sports and being around teams, and you know, I'm definitely a backstage person, if you will, but I go through the highs and lows with this team just like everyone else, and I enjoy game day. It's sacred, right, Roddy? And
that's what we always say. Yeah.
So I really enjoy it, and you know, I have the opportunity that I'm comfortable around, and you see me throwing footballs at practice a little bit and that, but I enjoy it. I enjoy getting out of bed every day and coming to work.
Ryan Pollock, thank you, and we'll see you. Well, we'll see you before Edmonton, but it's going to be fun.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. And as always, thanks for making the trip up here.
Riders Director of Media, Ryan Pollock. By the way, one more segment with Luke, and we will take your questions and comments. There's a flood have come in. You can write us on the Prairie Mobile text line, 551-CKRM, 551-2576, Prairie Mobile, your authorized Sastel Mobility dealer. Or you can write us on the Molson Twitter feed, at Rod Peterson. It's brought to you by Coors Light. Right now, find one of four stainless steel silver bullet koozies in select 24 can cases of Coors Light. We'll be right back to Saskatoon's Griffith Stadium after this timeout on 620 CKRM. Boston Pizza afternoon rush time from Saskatoon Rider Training Camp. The Memorial Cup semifinal goes tonight in Regina as the host Pats take on the OHL champion Hamilton Bulldogs. The winner plays the Q champion Acadie Bathurst Teton in Sunday's final. 8 o'clock tonight on 620 CKRM. LeBron James is in danger of missing out on the NBA Finals for the first time since 2010. LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers face elimination tonight as they host the Boston Celtics in Game 6 of the Eastern Finals. And Major League Baseball has extended the admin leave of Toronto closer Roberto Osuna through June 4th, the third time. The initial 7-day period was lengthened. Osuna was initially put on leave by MLB on May 8th after he was charged with one count of assault by Toronto police. Blue Jays at Philadelphia tonight. That is the Boston Pizza Afternoon Rush. Try one of Boston Pizza's five new thin crust pizzas, thin crust creations at Boston Pizza. Gather round. Final segment with Luke and I. Scruffy takes over at the bottom of the hour with your Memorial Cup pregame. Jim and Jody from Watson, Saskatchewan, right in Prairie Mobile text line. They say, took a trip up to watch the training camp today. We were a little late, so stuck around till the players left. Very proud to see the entire team high-five and chat with those kids. And don't think we didn't notice you talking to them as well, Rod. Rider pride. Jim, and hey, that's what makes it all fun. That's what makes it fun. Adam from Theodore writes in and says, what's the biggest thing with the Riders to watch for on Sunday against the Eskimos?
Execution. That's what it is. It's execution, because this is a very talented roster. Again, there's going to be some new guys out there. However, it's going to be a smattering of core guys as well, just because of the ratio that exists between veteran experience and newer guys coming on this roster. So I think that you want to see the ability to protect the quarterback, and for the ability for these quarterbacks to make throws to whatever receivers are out there. Defensively, it goes down to the fundamentals, right? Tackling. Are you pursuing the ball at the right angle? Are you pushing ball carriers if you're missing the tackle, or the ball carrier is being pushed into your help? Things like that. It's called setting the edge of the defense and then following through and tackling sort of with that team defense mentality. Just
we'll be coming back in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Where did I get cut off, do you think?
Where Coach Jones schemes the attack.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be very interesting to see how Coach Chris Jones schemes the attack here in this first exhibition game, because, again, you've seen them approach team drills aggressively to the point where you think that, hey, there's a lot more trust here in year three than there may have existed, or may have been more of a feeling out process in year two with some of the guys. So hopefully it all works out. But again, it's just about execution, making sure everybody understands alignment, assignment, and then make the play.
And that's very minutia stuff there. I mean, quarterback play, obviously, be real cool to see who the running backs are. I don't know if they're going to use Jerome Messam on Sunday. I'd be surprised if they don't, Luke. And you mentioned the offensive line, obviously, quarterback protection. But the linebackers, that's a moving target. If there's any position that's a moving target on this team, it's linebackers right now.
Yeah, that linebacker group is going to be interesting. I think the one linebacker that's just head over heels right now in terms of solidified is Derek Moncrief. He's been all over the field. He's been really a joy to watch. I think, obviously, Sammy Guavin's going to come into that equation as well and be that starting middle. But, again, that Canadian spot, I think the Canadian will linebacker spot, if it remains there, is all going to come down to the ability to cover, the ability to play special teams, and that's where that battle is going to be won. Also, you're obviously going to be looking at the left tackle position. There's a few wide receivers, new wide receivers that are battling. I would expect to see Devon Bailey continue his ascension. I would expect to see Jordan Williams-Lambert to make some plays as he's been doing. So there's so much to watch. It's going to be exciting. Also, in the secondary, there's going to be a couple battles. That boundary corner spot is not yet solidified, I don't think. Even though Chris Lyles was playing on the B group today and Nick Marshall was replacing him with the A group, these coaches have mixed these guys around a lot this season. So I don't look much into that. It's all about making plays.
We've covered a lot in 90 minutes here on a Four Seasons Football Friday. It's all going to be in our podcast at sportscage.ca, posted by Marky Mark. brought to you by the Canadian Brew House with amazing specials on food and ice-cold beer. There's no better place to watch hockey. One more quick football question from Brian in Hudson Bay. Hey, guys, lots of talk about some real good news. What do you guys think the chances are of one of the vets losing their job, maybe even a possible trade? I honestly can't see that happening, but...
Well, this is a business, and I think that when you're Coach Jones looking to get as much talent on the field as possible, anything goes. We saw this coaching staff make a trade for Peter Diakowski literally the day before camp last year. I think that this is a staff that is still out scouting hard despite being out here in Saskatoon. I think these scouts are out looking for talent. I don't think it's a... I don't think there's a period in the Chris Jones regime process to where things are tapered down. I think that it's business as usual at camp, and these guys are still scouring for talent. And I think that if there are guys who become available, whether it's through the releasing process or just guys who are out there that they may want to take a look at over some guys they're not getting enough out of here, then Coach Jones is going to pull the trigger because he understands, hey, this is a big year for this staff, and they're going to do everything they can to bring a ring home.
If they identify a spot where they need somebody that they don't have, yeah, I could see a trade, but I don't see anything imminent right now. We'll end on a hockey question. Ian from Moose Jaw writes in. He says, before you have to go, Rod, what are your thoughts on the Pats game tonight? What do they need to do to be in the final come Sunday? I'll tell you this. They beat Hamilton once. They beat Swift Current Wednesday in the biggest game of the year, and that was because of their effort, and two, their rest and their health. They beat a weary, tired Swift Current team. But let's not forget, Swift Current beat the Pats in round one, went to seven games, and the Pats were missing in that series. Max Paddock, Libor Hayek, and a few others. The Pats are as good as any team, but they need to sell out tonight, play like their life depends on it. They're two wins away from their fourth Memorial Cup in franchise history, but they're two games against the top two teams in the country. Point is, they're good enough to be here. They've proven it. They have to play 11 out of 10. Or as my wife says, that's not possible. They have to play 10 out of 10. They have to be physical. Hamilton didn't like getting hit last Friday night, if you noticed. Keep that up. The Pats have no excuse not to win tonight. They're rested. They're at least as talented as Hamilton. I expect them to win. Sunday's another story. We'll talk about that when they get there. Scruffy standing by with Rich Sutter and guests from the Celebration Zone. This has been Four Seasons Football Friday live from Rider Training Camp. The next time we talk to you, Sunday from Commonwealth Stadium, Riders and Eskimos in a 3 o'clock kickoff. We'll have the broadcast. This is Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
Good afternoon, Saskatchewan, and welcome to the second half of the Sports Cage. It's not a Four Seasons Football Friday now. We're going to call it a Memorial Cup Friday. Mitchell Blair with you at the Brandt Celebration Zone. Rich Sutter joining me. And I got to admit, I am really pleased to have my next guest on. He is going to be singing the national anthem tonight. You are hearing him underneath my voice. He's going to be performing in the Brandt Celebration Zone tomorrow night. I could sit here and talk about what he has done since he started in the world of country music, but if we did that, it would go right into the pregame show. He is Paul Brandt. Paul, how are you?
I was getting nervous there for a second. You're saying I could go on forever about what he's done. I'm like, what did I do now? Oh, man, I'm in big trouble. It's great to be here with you. This is exciting.
Nice to have you. I'm sure if Colin Lovequist is listening right now, he's going, what the HE double hockey sticks is going on? Paul Brandt's doing the Sports Cage. Good to see you in town. You're going to sing the national anthem tonight, and I know that's got you pumped, but I know you're a hockey fan, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know you did great things with Humboldt, and I thought the remake of Small Towns, Big Dreams was tremendous.
Oh, thank you for saying
and
that.
And I just got to ask, is everybody's played the game? How long did you play the game?
You know what? I've been chasing my son around. He's been playing a lot since I moved back from Nashville. He's about 10 years old now. But I grew up in Calgary and Airdrie playing a lot of street hockey. My folks couldn't afford to get me into hockey, and it just wasn't a part of their life. But I loved the game. We didn't yet have a TV till I was about 13 years old. And when we finally got one, we were watching Hockey Night in Canada, you know, whenever it was on. And I moved away to Nashville, got that record deal, and I moved back. And some of my buddies were like, boy, are you sure you're from Canada? Because if you can't get out on that ice and play, we're doubting your identity. So I went and joined a men's league in my mid-30s. And I broke a lot of bones and took a lot of pucks in the face and all kinds of stuff. And I'm at a point now where I'm good enough that if I score, both teams cheer, you know. So it's got way to go, little buddy, you know. But I just absolutely love the game, everything about it, and as involved as I can be.
Should also tell you, I'm also joined by another Alberta boy. Rich Sutter's back with me.
We were reminiscing about,
I was going to say, your paths have crossed a time or two.
I wish Paul would be so competitive. He shouldn't be blocking shots and breaking bones. He's not getting paid to do that kind of stuff. You know?
I'm going to get heart
and
soul,
that's a good
man.
Alberta comparative.
Yeah, that's right.
The Humboldt situation.
Yeah.
And as I said, I know that you did great things. That obviously touched everybody.
Yeah.
For you, what was it that sort of ripped at your heartstrings?
I think it was probably the same thing that you know tore apart everybody. And I mean, when the news came in, I was preparing to take a trip out to Toronto. We had a new music project that we were just getting ready to launch, and we're going to go promote it. And it just seemed like the world stopped. You know, there have been a few times in recent history where we've all had that feeling. I think 9/11 was one of them. And I think when that bus crash happened, we all realized that control had been taken away, and it's a horrible feeling. And you put yourself in the position of those families and that community as much as you can. And so I was trying to figure out how I could make a contribution with my platform. You know, sometimes there's nothing you can do but walk alongside. And I was getting ready to go to Toronto to do this thing, and I thought maybe I should cancel it. But then I thought about those families. I thought about those boys. I thought about everything that they always put on the line, the risks that they took. And I thought, you know, I got to go do this. And Ron McLean had asked me months before to rewrite Small Towns and Big Dreams for Hometown Hockey. And I'd done that, and I thought, man, if I could do that song live and I could dedicate it to Humboldt, that would be something. And so I called Haley Wickenheiser, and I asked if Haley would come out and help me with the dedication of the song. And then she said, why don't you tag along with me after you're done here in Toronto, and we'll go to Humboldt. And we spent a bunch of time there, and it was an honor, you know, to walk alongside the families and be there.
You've got many great songs, and I could list all of them, but again, I'd be here until 7 o'clock. But that one is my favorite, and what you did with it just made it even more so. With all the songs that you do, what's the one in particular you like doing the most?
You know, that one to me is a really special one. I think, you know, songs like Alberta Bound, Convoy. We've got one right now that's doing really well on the charts called All About Her that's just been rocking. And they're all fun to play live. But Small Towns is really special because it's just the story of my life. You know, when I was in the hospital room chatting with the boys there that were probably the least injured of the bunch but had some pretty serious life injuries, it made me think about my life walk and the things that I went through as a young man their age. And I thought, you know, what do you say?
Yeah.
Like, what do you say in a situation like that, right? And there was a moment for me in my career right around the time that I wrote Small Towns and Big Dreams where the record company was putting some pressure on me, and they asked me a question. They said, what's more important, what you believe or your career? And we were fighting. We were arguing. I thought, man, you know, they're being mean, but that's actually a pretty good question, you know. And I decided I was going to, you know, always go out and do the things that I really believed in and not really worry about the career thing, let it take care of itself. But that challenged my identity in that moment. And I remember these boys and everything that they'd been through, and I figured that they were having some challenges with identity too. And I encouraged them. I said, guys, what you do is not who you are. What you do is not who you are. And you're going to have an opportunity to do something that is going to help millions of people now that you've gone through what you've gone through. And it was a moving, incredible moment, but that song was the song that I think connected us, you know.
Before I let you go, you talked about Convoy.
Had
a couple of NHLers in that video, so there's that hockey background for you there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a great time, filming that and getting a few different guests that came to be a part of it. And, you know, it was great to see Conroy be out there. And I think his head was shaved at the moment.
You need to do a redo of that with Sutter.
Yeah, you know, we should. That'd be great. Awesome. You'd make a great truck driver.
Well, you go back to believe in your mind what you conceive in your heart, right, Paul?
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing when things like this go on in our lives and how we're all touched, but it's amazing how people that are so connected, doesn't matter what your background is, country music, music in general, athletes, it's amazing how people come together, and especially how we've been able to handle it, Weston.
They will always be in our hearts.
Are you going to play that tomorrow night?
Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah, we'll be playing that.
Paul, I am looking forward to hearing you do the anthem tonight, and I'm looking real forward to seeing you perform at the Celebration Zone tomorrow night. I'm glad that you're doing this on a night when there's no hockey, because when this is going on, I'm getting post-game stuff, and the other night I went to leave, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to come in here, have a beer, and I walked in here, and it was closed down. Yeah. So tomorrow night, obviously, there's nothing going on because there's no game going on. So
you get to rock it.
Yeah, you get to rock it, and he'll be here tomorrow night, Brent Celebration Zone. So come down and listen to one of the best in Canadian country music, Paul. I'll be here. I know a lot of other people will.
Awesome.
Thanks for the time, and
belt
out that anthem.
Yeah, man. Cheers.
All right, Paul Brandt, Canadian country superstar with us inside the sports cage. When we come back, Rich Sutter and I will tee up tonight's Regina Pats Hamilton Bulldogs game. You are listening to a Four Seasons Football / Hockey Friday on 620 CKRM. It is time for the RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker, and the Acadie Bathurst Teton await the winner of tonight's semifinal at the MasterCard Memorial Cup. The host Regina Pats and the Hamilton Bulldogs meet at 8 o'clock. Our pregame show starts at 7 right here on 620 CKRM. The Swift Current Broncos need a new head coach. Manny Viveros is leaving the team after 2 years on the job. He's heading to the NHL to be an assistant coach with the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers also announced today former Calgary Flames coach Glenn Gullitson, former Anaheim assistant and Chicago head coach Trent Yanni are also joining as assistants. Of course, as you probably know, Gullitson and Yanni are both from Hudson Bay. No Stanley Cup action this weekend. The Knights and Capitals begin the final on Monday. And, of course, Sunday, 3 o'clock, the Riders and the Eskimos from Commonwealth. Our pregame show right here on 620 CKRM starts at noon. And then Rod and Luke will have the play-by-play at 3. If you're going, well, what does that mean about the Memorial Cup final? Means the Memorial Cup final will be in our sister station, the Wolf 104.9 pregame show at 4 o'clock, and then Phil Andrews will rock you out with the Memorial Cup final starting at 5. The RMP Sportscade Sports Ticker for Regina Motor Products. Save up to 20% off MSRP on select vehicles and enter to win Metallica tickets during Mega Metal May at Regina Motor Products. Mitchell Blair, Rich Sutter with you. Rich, I want to get into what we're going to see tonight at the Brandt Center in a moment, but first, tell you what, it was pretty tough keeping that secret about Manny Viveros all week, because I heard about it last Saturday afternoon after the Broncos game was over, and I had heard that Manny Viveros was probably had a job in the NHL when the Western Hockey League final was on, but I didn't know what team it was. And then Saturday afternoon, I learned that Manny Viveros was going to the Edmonton Oilers, and me being the Oilers fan that I am, I'm going, well, this is great, but you want to keep that under wraps, and once the Broncos were done, the word started to spill out. I think not only is Manny Viveros good for the Edmonton Oilers, but Glenn Gullitson and Trent Yanni are going to be as well.
Well, the word, I mean, the cat kind of got out of the bag a little bit in the final series between Everett and Swift Current about something was going down, and you kind of knew it was only going to be a matter of time whenever it was going to be announced, and obviously they didn't want to do it as long as the Broncos were playing.
Right.
And they probably wanted to make sure that they announced Trent and Glenn ahead of time as well. But the funny thing about it, I was sitting here wondering, where's Manny from?
St. Albert.
Yep. Okay. So
what I didn't know about Manny.
So he's going back home.
Yep.
But I think it's awesome, you know, the connection between the three Saskatchewan guys and Todd. I've had Todd and worked with him before in Houston, and we built the expansion team in Minnesota. These guys that they're bringing in are quality people first and foremost. And then coaches. And, boy, I think the Edmonton Oilers have really struck gold with this and bringing these guys in. And I think it's going to be a wonderful turnaround in Edmonton. I'm certainly excited about what's going to happen in Edmonton and the potential that could happen with these guys going forward.
Speaking of the Oilers, former Oiler and former Regina Pat Jordan Eberle is going to join us in the 6 o'clock hour. I had a chance to speak with Jordan this afternoon. He was at the Sticks Ball Hockey Tournament. $13,000 raised for Kidsport. All that money to Kidsport given to them in memory of Adam Harold. And, of course, Adam Harold, one of the Humboldt Broncos that was tragically killed last month in that bus crash. Rich, tonight, the Pats and the Bulldogs. The Bulldogs have been looking better and better and better as this Memorial Cup has gone along. The Pats beat them in the opening game. I don't think we're going to have the same type of game tonight as what we saw a week ago.
Well, no, and I think the biggest thing, if you think you're going to see, when you go into a semifinal game, there's a reason why Hamilton is here. They beat out teams along the way in the Ontario Hockey League that they were the underdogs in some series, and they certainly were in the OHL final. And they're a team that you knew that this was not going to go away. There's no quit in a Bulldog, and knowing that group and spending some time with the coaching staff this morning and Steve Staios, this group will be ready to play tonight. And I'm telling you one thing, they're going to be in for a heck of a fight here tonight.
The Hamilton Bulldogs, if you remember, were the main competitor for the Regina Pats in getting this 100th MasterCard Memorial Cup. There's sort of a silent, they haven't really come out and said it, but they've said it. The Hamilton Bulldogs want to show that they should have been the team to be the host of the 100th MasterCard Memorial Cup. And when they didn't get it, they just said, you know what, we're going to do everything in our power
to
get it back home, to get the Memorial Cup. We might not have hosted it because maybe we didn't have the pockets that the Pats had, but we're going to come to Regina and we're going to win the Memorial Cup and take it back to Hamilton where it should have been.
Well, you know what, and good on them to have that mindset.
Motivation, yep.
Motivation to do it, and I'm sure they have all other kinds of motivation to win this thing tonight as well. So, yeah, we're going to be in for a heck of a treat here tonight. I hope that a lot of the Swift Current fans that have bought up tickets at four games like this tonight, hoping that their own hometown Broncos will be here, I would hope that some of those fans will at least find their way back. And if they hadn't, I hope they found a way to give those tickets or do some with those tickets. So we have a full building here tonight, a night that's important, Mitch. It's important for the game. And it'd be awesome to see the noise and get rowdy here tonight.
I said this the other day. 2001, the Pats score a late goal against Valdor. I've never heard it louder in the Brandt Center, Agrodome back then, for a Regina Pats game. The loudest I've ever heard the Brandt Center, the Agrodome, was when Sandra Schmirler and her team came back into the rink after winning gold in Nagano. It was also pretty loud when Hulk Hogan came in here one night too, but that's another story. But for a Pats game, I've never heard it louder than that night. As it was said to me last night, had the Pats scored to make it 7-7 against Acadie Bathurst, it might have equaled that. But I really think tonight this place could, if everything happens right, and there's a big moment tonight in the third period or something, I think it could be the loudest we've ever heard it. Here.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, I thought the other night, honestly, when the Swift Current Broncos came on the ice to start the game, the beginning of the game, and how the noise came up from the Swift Current faithful was that it made me think of nights in Vegas this year when I was at games and you get all the visiting teams' fans come in, Mitch, and it was almost like the Vegas fan said, okay, let's let you have your moment and see how loud you can get
right.
And how loud you can be, because when you get your moment, that's it. It's only a moment because we are coming, and look out. And Regina Pat fans tonight, let's be loud, let's be vocal, let's be crazy in here. Support this group because they're facing a formidable opponent tonight, and they're going to need help.
Hey, very quickly, and we're going to break here at 6 o'clock here right away, Sam Steele. He's been the best player in this tournament, no doubt. And a lot of people are looking at Sam Steele. I've heard a lot of people say Sam Steele could step in to the NHL next season. I've heard some other people, and I heard a conversation on NHL radio today saying a season or two in San Diego wouldn't hurt Sam Steele because some habits that he's learned in junior hockey that you can't do in the NHL, you'll get rid of that in a couple years in the American Hockey League. As somebody who knows the game a lot better than I do because you're around it a lot more than I am, is Sam Steele ready to step into the Ducks lineup, or does he have to go to San Diego for a year or two?
I think he's going to need some time, but you know what? It's all about timing. It's all about opportunity. It's all about, you know, is he more important to develop and play 8-9 minutes tonight if he gets those kind of minutes at the NHL level? And if he is getting them, you got to hope that he's getting them with some top-end players around him. It's going to be some opportunities to save power play time. But or is it more important he goes down and he gets all those opportunities in playing 16 to 18 minutes a night in the minors for a while? But you know what? People need to understand that the American Hockey League is a huge step from major junior hockey still. And then there's another step beyond that to the National Hockey League. And is Sam capable of achieving those things next October? Of course he is. But, you know, it's going to be an important summer for him, even though it's going to be short. The window is short. You know, you're looking at June and July and August. He's got 90 days to rest and try and get strong again and add some pounds to his body. And So it's all up to Sam Steele, too, you know.
All right, we will take a break. Hour two in the books, a busy hour coming up. Of course, we're taking you right through to 7 o'clock. And then Les Lazarick, Al Dumba, and Kelly Rempel will be in with the pregame show. It's the Pats and the Hamilton Bulldogs. It's the MasterCard Memorial Cup semifinal. And it's coming your way tonight on 620 CKRM. And hopefully you're going to be in the Brandt Center tonight, because it is going to be something else inside there when those two teams hit the ice. News is coming up next. Hour three coming up on the other side. You are listening to the Sports Cage and a Four Seasons Football Hockey. Football Friday, Football Hockey Friday on 620 CKRM. Mitchell Blair with you. MasterCard Memorial Cup semifinal Friday. The Hamilton Bulldogs and the Regina Pats to meet at the Brandt Center at 8 o'clock. Les Lazarick, Al Dumba, and Kelly Rempel will have the pregame show for you at 7, followed by Phil Andrews and the play-by-play at 8. I am joined by Rich Sutter, and it's been a lot of fun being joined by Rich all week down here in the Brandt Celebration Zone inside the Credit Union Eventplex. And Rich, earlier today, and I know you probably don't know a lot about this, the Shooting Stars Foundation. It is a foundation that was started by Mike Sillinger and Jamie Heward. You know who those two fine individuals are. They started it up in, I think it was 2007. Jordan Eberle joined a few years after that, and they've usually shut down a part of downtown Regina, right outside of our radio station on Rose Street, for an event called Sticks on Rose. Well, this year they moved that to the International Trade Center with the Memorial Cup and that going on, and they had their ball hockey tournament today, 20 corporate teams. They do it for charity. Kidsport was the charity this year. You're very familiar with Kidsport.
Absolutely.
They raised $13,000. They presented a check to Kidsport today. I was glad to be there.
Wow.
They presented it to Kidsport in memory of Adam Harold. And, of course, you know who Adam Harold is, and I think everybody out there knows who Adam Harold is. It was very great to see. Jordan Eberle is going to drop the puck tonight. And earlier today, I had a chance to catch up with Jordan Eberle to talk about this charity, being back in Regina, and his season. Jordan Eberle, I knew you'd be in this building at some point, although I sort of wondered maybe if you would be after being at the Worlds, but how good is it to be back in Regina and being with something that I know you're really fond of here with the Shooting Stars Foundation?
Yeah, I've done it for a number of years. It's always fun. I think for me, being from Regina, I get to come back, and I don't live in the summer here, but I come back and see a lot of people that I don't get to see too much, so that's always fun. And then I think I get to see a lot of fans. I think, you know, Regina Undercover is, there's a lot of hockey fans here, so you get to talk to them and make some money while you're doing it.
It's, when you do something like this, this isn't hard for you because of the charity, of the work that the Shooting Stars Foundation does. This is something I know that really is right up at the top of the ladder for you.
Yeah, you know, like I mentioned, you get to raise some money while you're just basically hanging out with your friends. I don't think it really gets much better than that, so goes to a great cause. It's always been a fun event. Like I said, the people in Regina have always been awesome to me, obviously being from here. And it's funny, I come to these things and I know 75% of the people are, you know, I went to high school or elementary school, or I know someone they know. It's just always the same story. So, it's just always fun to do.
Talk about the season. You come back from the Worlds. Unfortunately, you didn't medal at the Worlds, but I know you're tired of playing at the Worlds, and you've only had one Stanley Cup appearance. Is it frustrating again that a new team, but again you weren't in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah, it's what you play for. You play to try and get to the playoffs. So, it was frustrating. I think it was a good change for me. I really enjoyed playing in Long Island. The coaching, just everything. It was a fun atmosphere. It wasn't the result that we wanted, but I think if you look at our team, the way that we can score, I think we just got to figure out how to defend a little bit better, and we'll be there.
Being an Oilers fan, it's tough to see you in an Islander jersey still, and I still don't like the way that you were sort of ushered out of Edmonton and being blamed for what happened, but how was the year in New York? Because it seemed like maybe you did get your game back on track this year, if it had altered any in Edmonton the last season.
Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed playing there. It was, things are different as far as there's not as much media attention. It's easier to play maybe a little bit. And I had fun playing hockey there. It was, I'm excited to go back. Like I said, I think we got a great team. I think we got a great group of forwards. I think we've shown that we're one of probably the most dynamic offensive groups, we just learn how to keep the puck out of our net and we'll be fine.
Is the big key, though, getting John back?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a big part of the team. He's the captain, the leader, so it's funny. The last 3 weeks, it's the only question anyone asks me is about that, so I wish I had an answer. It's, it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
Being here, Memorial Cup, and I know you didn't get a chance to play in a Memorial Cup and that, but what's it like seeing your team at the Memorial Cup?
Yeah, it's neat, and I got back just the other day. That's why my voice is gone. It's been in Denmark still, but I came to the game on Wednesday, and the atmosphere was amazing. It was an exciting game, and just back and forth, the entertainment, and I think the city of Regina, I think the way that they're putting it on, the crowd's been awesome. So it's just, it's going to be another great night tonight, it's just cool for me to come back, and I feel old now because I'm watching these kids play the team that I used to play on, and I'm rooting for them, so it'll be a good night tonight.
What did it mean for you to be a Regina Pat?
That was awesome. Like I said, I'm from here, and I had season tickets when I was a kid, and I still go to the Branson, right? I think of it as the Agrodome, but I still go there, and I see where I used to sit as a kid, so then I got a chance to play there for 4 years, and every time I come back, it's kind of a cool feeling.
And you know tonight, and you're Pat's royalty, and there's no doubt about that, and you're dropping the puck tonight. You know that Pat's fans are going to salute you like they would with any other member of Pat royalty.
Yeah, like I said, it's just fun to be back. I think, for me, you come back to things like this, and a lot of the alumni here, and it's funny, I'm chatting with guys like Garth Murray and Bear Jackman, guys I used to watch when I was a kid. So, it's fun to be back. The city of Regina is always awesome as far as they're great fans, and it's fun to be a part of that.
Jordan Eberle of the New York Islanders, and Rich, Jordan Eberle had a pretty good season in New York this year, but I feel bad for him because he still hasn't had a chance to really get engaged in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
No, and he will. I'm a huge Jordan Eberle fan. I have been since he was like 12 years old. but the biggest thing is, I think the New York Islanders took a major step forward, albeit maybe not on the ice, but I think off the ice, and which will help in the long run, what goes on the on-ice product, and bringing in Lou Lamoriello the other day. There's a man who just gets it and just knows what it takes to get there, and what a great and smart move by the Islander organization.
All right, we are joined here in the Brandt Celebration Zone inside the Credit Union Eventplex by a guy I've wanted to have on all week because he put out a story. When was it? Right as the tournament started, I believe it was.
Saturday,
about the 1980 Memorial Cup. And those that know the 1980 Memorial Cup, and I know it well, and I may tell the story when it's over, and maybe I think the statute of limitations is over, so I don't think Regina police could come get me, but maybe they could, so maybe I'll just keep my mouth shut. But we all remember what happened when the Peterborough Petes played the Cornwall Royals, and the Petes threw the game, and there's no doubt in saying that. And you can ask a lot of people around here, and they will tell you that. And then the Cornwall Royals won the Memorial Cup Final in what was a bizarre afternoon in here. Robert Savard went end-to-end to give the Royals the Memorial Cup. That was the team that Dale Hawerchuk played on. Daniel Nugent-Bowman from Sportsnet wrote a tremendous article. I don't know how many guys you talked to and how much you left on the floor, but he joins us right now. Daniel, how much fun was that for you writing that article and just getting it from all sides as to what happened during that 48 hours.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you guys. Thanks, Mitchell, and nice to see you again, Rich. We'll start with saying allegedly, okay? Allegedly, from all sides of the coin. Even Ron Flockhart was saying he doesn't believe it. So I don't know. We'll take him at his word on that. But nobody in Peterborough is buying it except for a young beat reporter who people in the hockey world will know very well, and that's Mike Brophy, who has had no doubt that the Petes threw that last round robin game. But yeah, it was very fun to put together, getting it from all three sides, and then obviously a neutral party in Mike Brophy. But it was very interesting to hear people, even like Mike Keenan, gave me about 25 minutes of his time and answered every question. Yeah, so it was great to talk to everyone, and like I said, Cornwall didn't really care. They got through. They got their championship. Most of the Pats folks that I talked to were kind of in the one corner, and then the Peterborough feeds were mostly in the other, right?
When did you get the idea to write that story? Because you don't come up with that on a Monday and write it for Saturday. How long had that been in the making?
I started thinking about it actually at the start of the year. I was I had called Barry Trotz, who ultimately was in the article, and I was doing some kind of preview, and I kind of stumbled across some of these things and said, hey, this sounds like pretty interesting thing. Regina obviously is hosting the Memorial Cup again. I know that they're the city had hosted it in 2001, so it wasn't the it had been there more recently, obviously. But I just thought, hey, this might be good to go down memory lane. I'm sure, and the kind of the concept of an oral history is there's no way, I guess, really to prove it. You kind of want to get everyone's side and let them retell the story. So I kind of started with Barry Trotz in September and then put it aside for a little bit, and then February, March, and April really hunkered down and talked to a bunch of people.
Yeah, we can talk about Peterborough allegedly throwing the game, but when you're on a 3-on-1 and you dump it in the corner, yeah, there's something not right with that. It's funny because you talk about Mike Keenan giving you 25 minutes. I remember when Mike Keenan was the coach of the Calgary Flames and they had an exhibition game in Saskatoon, and I went up and they did the media scrum before the game. And I asked Mike, because I don't like Mike Keenan. Because of that, I don't like the Peterborough Petes. I still, as a Pats fan, as a Regina native, I don't like them. And I asked Mike, I said, Mike, what would you like to tell me about the 19 Memorial Cup? And he went, why? And I said, well, I'm a Pats fan. I was there. He didn't want to talk to me about it.
Yeah.
So, but I can understand why. This tournament. Well, first of all, before I guess the other thing, that what happened that night was sort of the precursor to the Memorial Cup being a four-team event, which is something I didn't really realize until I had read the article.
Yeah, I was Mike Keenan kind of brought that up, and I guess Mike Brophy did as well. But it was more so, like, no, I don't think anyone from the league side of the coin thought that they had thrown the game, but it was just that they the Petes were put in this position to, I guess, have the thought that they maybe could throw the game, or they're just in a very precarious situation. So the thought was that, you know, obviously in this tournament there are some weird goals for, goals against kind of factors or whatnot, but there is never a point now in the tournament where you can handpick an opponent. And I think that's obviously what they want in having it four teams.
On the precursor, you talk about that being the precursor to becoming a host tournament. If I believe, I might be wrong here, but I believe the first time that was hosted was my year in the Memorial Cup with Lethbridge in Portland in '83.
I think you're right.
And, you know, that was a bit of a shocker for us, too. Here we played Portland, beat them in a best of seven final in five games, and lost our goalie, Kenny Raggett, in the first period of the final game with torn ankle ligaments. And back then, that was the old crazy rule back then, you guys, where you could pick a goalie.
Is that when you brought Mike Vernon?
Well, that's when we tried to bring
Mike Vernon
in.
Right.
But we couldn't, because we beat Calgary in the first round or second round of the playoffs after we beat Winnipeg out. And we had some things that went on in those games between us and Mike Vernon that Mike Vernon didn't really like. Back then, you know, when goalies went in the net, they were told that maybe you should stay in the net after the first time. So when we chose that, losing Ken Raggett, we knew we had two of the top three goalies in the league that year. It was Ken Raggett, Mike Vernon, and then Dwayne Murray, who was our backup goaltender. So Dwayne played the rest of the night. And then so the day after we'd won, we called the league and said, Mike Vernon will play for us. And that was the rule. And there was no rule in the book anywhere in God's green earth that if he didn't play for us, that he'd go play for Portland. There was no rule that the host team could have pick up a goalie. Somehow he ends up in Portland.
Yep.
Like, you tell me how in the world that happened. It was nonsense. The only good thing about the whole thing after winning the league that year was going into Portland, beating Portland in the Memorial Cup 11-3 in their home building, beating them again. But Portland went on to win the Memorial Cup.
It's funny you talk about that rule, Rich. This did not make it into the story, but Bart Hunter, the goaltender for the Pats, he was the goaltender for Portland, I believe, the previous year, and was called upon to join the Brandon Wheat Kings in the Memorial
That's
Cup.
Right.
So he kind of knew a little bit about that as well.
Daniel, can you stick around over the break to talk about
sure.
what we've seen over the past
Absolutely.
Week and what we could see tonight? Sounds good. All right, Daniel Nugent-Bowman from Sportsman, he's going to stick around. Rich Sutter, of course, is going to stick around, and I will be as well. We'll be right back. You're listening to a Four Seasons Memorial Cup Friday in the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Mitchell Blair, Rich Sutter with you inside the Brandt Celebration Zone. Method to Madness, you can hear them in the background. They are getting fans warmed up for tonight's game, the Pats and the Bulldogs, 8 o'clock in the MasterCard Memorial Cup semifinal. Daniel Nugent-Bowman from Sportsnet joins us. Great article he wrote on the Memorial Cup that was an interesting final back in the days when the Peterborough Petes, the 1980 Memorial Cup, when the Peterborough Petes allegedly threw a game to prevent the Pats from being in the final. But let's go from 80 to 2018. And Daniel, this has been, and I don't see every Memorial Cup, but I watch a lot of it on TV. This has been a rather unique Memorial Cup because of all the one-goal games, and yeah, we had a two-goal game, but the goal was scored with less than a second to go into an empty net. But I really think the Memorial Cup this year has really been a showcase of junior hockey, with no one team really showing that they're above the others.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. Obviously, the games have all, like you said, been very close. We had basically, you know, two almost blowout games before some third period comebacks were worked in. But yeah, you're right. I mean, when you get three teams that are 2-1, and obviously Swift Current was in every game despite being very beat up. And we, you know, Manny Baveros, now the former coach, talked about all the injuries that the team had. So for them to even be in a lot of these games, I think it was a tremendous accomplishment for them given their long playoff run and the injuries. So I think you are seeing a lot of high-quality action here, and it will be interesting to see how the next couple of games go.
The Hamilton Bulldogs aren't the same team that we saw a week ago tonight when they lost 3-2 to the Pats. The Pats, I think, have gotten better, but not as incrementally better as what Hamilton has gotten during this tournament. But it's going to be a battle for the Pats tonight, I think, to win this game. I think they go in as the underdog. And what I don't like about this team is the fact that they've given up a lot of goals. And I know you were in one of the scrums that I was in yesterday. I asked John Paddock if this is a run-and-gun thing, and he didn't like that question very much when I asked if this was a run-and-gun team the way they'd gone, but they've really got to tighten it up on their blue line tonight or else they're a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, John Gruden, the coach of the Bulldogs, was saying that, you know, it's a case where he knows a lot of Regina seems to be scoring off the rush. You looked at most of the goals they scored against Swift Current. It was, you know, Henry and Steele Manning 2-on-1s. They score on the power play. Their power play is working at an almost 50% clip. So the Pats are being very opportunistic. But you know, when you're trading chances and whatnot, that you're going to get stuff back on the other way. And Max Paddock, you know, he looked very good in the first game. Not so great, obviously, in the second game, getting pulled after the second period. And he let in a couple of soft ones against Swift Current. So I think that's, you know, the big X factor for the Pats is how Max Paddock will perform tonight against a big Hamilton team.
There's been a lot of players who have performed very well in this tournament, a lot of players that we'll see on the ice tonight. Thomas Studenich, Steele, Henry. Is Steele the top player in the tournament in your mind, or is it Thomas? Is it maybe Dobson? Is it maybe VL from Acadie Bathurst?
If you're talking about the tournament itself, I mean, I think Sam Steele has been tremendous, you know, just the offensive game. And he's been very, he's been dogging on the puck. Like, he's been very elusive. You know, 11 assists, he's been great in that regard. But if you're talking about the player that I think will have the greatest impact in the NHL, the best player in this tournament going forward, I think you're talking about Robert Thomas. You know, John Paddock was saying that in their last round-robin game, he played 27 minutes. I don't know how accurate that is. But it seemed like he was on the ice every second shift, and he was creating something. First power play, first penalty kill. I think he's going to be the guy that they're going to look to try to shut down Sam Steele tonight.
Before I let you go, if there's an X factor tonight on either team, who is it?
Well, again, I think it is Max Paddock in net, just because he's been kind of Jekyll and Hyde in this tournament. very young, as Rich and I were talking about off during the break. You know, didn't get a lot of action during the season. Of course, had the groin injury going into the playoffs. And on the Hamilton side, well, I mean, you look at Paddock, but Robert Thomas. But I do like that top defense unit of Justin Lemke and Riley Sutter. If they're going to be able to shut down that top line of Regina, I like their chances.
Daniel Nugent Bowman of Sportsnet, thank you very much for the time. We'll see you in the ring.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, Rich, Daniel brings it up. Max Paddock, obviously, tonight has to play a very solid hockey game tonight. He's sort of the X factor for the Pats. And as Daniel also said, Lemke and Stillman, if they can stop Steele tonight, it's big for Regina, for Hamilton.
The biggest thing for Max Paddock, you know, let's talk about the team first, is that the team in front of him has to be better. I mean, they allowed way too much traffic around the net. They were sloppy around their own net. They've got to let Max Paddock see the puck better, let him settle into his game. And that's up to the group on the back end. And it all comes back to that part of the game.
You weren't here for the 100th anniversary weekend, right?
No, I had I couldn't get away. I was committed with my team in Columbus.
So
at the time,
our next guest coming in, and he's a good friend of yours. I can't believe he didn't get the ink that he got for having the most points in a hockey game in history. He had 25 points here in the old-timers game.
Well, they never called any offsides, and I don't think he went back across. He didn't get to the red line, I was told.
I don't know, but all I know, he was getting points.
I know he spent a month.
He was so good. He was so good that day. He was getting points for both teams. But he knows what it's like to win a Memorial Cup in this building, because he did it with the Red Deer Rebels in 2001. He is Colby Armstrong, and he is scheduled to join us. I think he's on his way.
So he stole us anyway.
Yes, anyhow, we hope that he's on his way. We hope to have him on the other side. We'll take a break. You're listening to the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Rod Peterson, of course, up in Saskatoon. Mitchell Scruffy Blair with you on this Memorial Cup edition of Four Seasons Football Friday, which I'm now calling Four Seasons Memorial Cup Friday. Of course, the Riders and Eskimos, Sunday at 3 right here on 620 CKRM. Our pregame show starts at noon. The Memorial Cup final will start at 4 o'clock with the pregame show on the Wolf 104.9, the play-by-play at 5 o'clock with Phil Andrews. I was joking with Rich Sutter moments ago when the 100th anniversary celebration game was on. Our next guest, I can't believe they don't have his equipment at the Hockey Hall of Fame exhibit, because he scored, 25 points that afternoon?
No, that's getting a little carried away. It was 15 points.
Just 15?
Yeah, just a cool 15-point night, I think. it was awesome. It was cool to come back, and it was cool to come back here to Regina, obviously my home province in Saskatchewan, but to come back with the guys that we came back with, and the decades of players through the Western Hockey League, and it was like me and Jarrett Stoll and Travis Moen were kind of the young crew, and then it just escalated from there of guys that I grew up watching in the NHL, and of course we had Sutter's represented there, so it was pretty Western Hockey League.
Let me just interrupt you for one second, Rich.
Just hold on. No. The voice you're hearing, by the way, is Colby Armstrong from the Sportsman.
Did you get across the red line?
No, I didn't. I had a couple, you got to give the fans what they want, and I thought I put on a pretty good show. I mean, I've never done that before, so my mom was in attendance. It was huge for me.
You put on a pretty good show this week with everything that's going on. How's it gone up there with Jeff and the gang?
Yeah, with Jeff and Todd, it's gone really, really good. I thought the games have all been awesome, like really competitive, even games that we were thought, okay, let's get this over with. The Bathurst-Regina game turned into a comeback likely for the ages. Even Swift Current-Regina the other night, sure enough, Swift Current comes, they just wouldn't be put away. And so we've had some good competitive hockey. We've seen some great performances. Stuart Skinner that a few nights ago, unbelievable performance on the big stage. And, looking forward to tonight. This should be a good crowd again tonight.
And you know what else has gotten better all week has been Colby Armstrong. You know, he after the first couple nights, he learned to pace himself and finally realize that this just wasn't a five-day event. This was at least 10 or 11.
Rookie.
And, you think after his first rodeo, right? But he wanted to get right back on the bull and ride it again for crying out loud.
Nothing wrong
with
that.
But you got to figure it out by now.
Well, full disclosure, the first night at the Eagles concert, I got hanging around with some of those kids from the Humboldt Broncos team that were here in attendance and their parents, and Yeah, we hung out for quite a while that night, so I got it kicked off on the with a late night to start the tourney, and I've been playing catch up ever since.
What was that like for you? Because you've been affected by that,
yeah.
Like all of us were,
yeah.
And I know that you did a couple of tough interviews in the wake of that tragedy.
Yeah.
What was it like being around the families that obviously are still grieving?
It was hard. It was very difficult. It was I was unsure of, like, kind of, you know, to be around grief like that, and it was difficult. We were sharing stories. They were sharing stories of, you know, their boys that they lost, or, you know, their husband that they lost, or their daughter. And I mean, it was tough, and hearing stories and laughing one second and crying the next second, and it was extremely difficult. But you know, at the same time with that, it's so easy meeting them and talking to them, because I think, you know, Rich, you can attest to it, just as a hockey family, we're like, their parents were our parents. You know, the Billet families were there. I lived at those Billet families. I did the same thing these kids were doing, trying to chase a dream and trekking across all over the place to play hockey. So it was like a family almost. And you know, I'm sure it'll never fill a void of healing. Really, it'll be really, really tough for people for a long time. But we just wanted to give them a hug. We just wanted to be there for them.
And the scary thing about it, Colby, is, you know, you were probably in Pittsburgh when that happened.
Yeah.
The Penguins were still playing, and I don't believe they played that night. But, I mean, just how fast news travels.
Nowadays.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I was working the game. I was working a post game for the Penguins in Pittsburgh, and I saw it across with the social media. You see it right away, and then my mom called me, and that crushed me with my mom. She was all tore up about it, of course. Yeah, and then the next day was Saturday. It was Hockey Night in Canada, so it was that was the first time I was on Hockey Night in Canada as a broadcaster, and it was that was not fun.
It was not fun.
2001, you were in this building.
Yeah,
you won the Memorial Cup. You skated around the ice with it, and obviously, there are three guys that want to do that, get the cup on Sunday. As you've been doing your thing here this week, yeah. How much have you thought back to 2001?
A lot. Right when I walked into the rink day one, we came in here and watched some teams practice, and I was just like, well, I've been back in this rink since I got 15 points, you know, a few months ago. So, but, you know, it's for being here for this tournament, for this venue, I think it's escalated even bigger than it was, just because of, like, with the TV and the social media, and I don't know, like, being in TV now and seeing the features that they do to honor the trophy, the military, the game, 100 years. I don't know. I'm honored to be here, being able to work this tournament and being able to be there for this. So, yeah, it's cool to see. I look on the ice, I see where Jeff Smith shot at the net and tipped in off their own guy in Valdor in overtime. And
I was just going
to
say that.
And it's awesome to be here, too, because I have guys reaching out to me now that I'm on TV, ex-teammates. And Devin Francon, an ex-teammate of mine from Red Deer, won with us here. He's coming down today to go to the game. And Jeff Smith has reached out to me. I saw his sister the other day here in town. You know, you're linked together forever, and it's cool being back here. It's really cool.
When you take a look at the Memorial Cup and you see your name on it,
yeah,
what goes through your mind?
That's tough to describe. It's an amazing feeling just knowing.
How grateful.
Yeah, grateful, fortunate. The history, like the guys before you, their names on there. And we're doing that right now on TV. We're going through 100 years and going through every, you know, 10 yep. years of a 10, picking one team to highlight. And it's been unreal to see the team pictures and the players and the teams that came before you and some of the people that you've grown up now to watch in the NHL, and you know the names. It's pretty remarkable.
Colby, it was great catching up with you at the anniversary weekend. It's been great catching up with you again. You've been doing a great job on Sportsnet and seeing the stuff you've done with the Penguins this year. It's been great. When I want to talk hockey, man, I can't talk to Rich. I'll get your number and we'll talk hockey.
We can talk hockey all night long.
Yeah,
right?
We could do that now.
Hold on. I got one more question.
Yep.
What do you guys think tonight? What are you thinking?
Well, my concern is, you know what, Hamilton seems to have gotten better all week.
Yeah.
I keep waiting for the pads to get a little bit better. For me tonight, it's Max Paddock. It's more than anything, though, the pads have to manage the puck better.
Yeah.
They have to take control of the puck, manage it better coming out of their own end. And if they don't, it's not going to happen.
I think if the Pats can be very physical with Hamilton tonight, they can win another hockey game. It'll be a one-goal game, and it wouldn't surprise me if we see what we saw here last Friday with Nick Henry winning in the last one.
Yeah, absolutely. That top line's been lights out this tournament, right, with Sam yeah. Steele. I'm interested to see, like, one little thing I will be watching tonight. I know they put Mackenzie Entwistle up on their top line to kind of go head-to-head as a guy that can check and play both ends, and I'll be interested to see. I guarantee he'll be up out there with Robert Thomas on that top line against that Sam Steele
and
line.
For the Pats, the Bradleys and the Lecisions yeah. of the world yeah. need to score yeah. or do something that's going to create a difference offensively.
Colby Armstrong, thanks a lot. And if you're not in the rink tonight and watching it, you can watch yourself with Jeff Merrick, Todd Werner, RJ Broadhead, and Sam Cosentino on Sportsnet.
Yeah, thanks
all right.
for having me.
Not a problem. Colby Armstrong from Sportsnet. When we come back, we'll finish it off here. From the Brandt Center, Les Lazarek giving me the glare because he knows that he's getting in the zone to get ready to do the pregame show at the top of the hour. And, of course, Phil Andrews at 8 o'clock with what we hope will be a Regina Pats victory as they will move into the final against the Acadie Bathurst Teton. We'll take a break. You're listening to the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Mitchell Blair, Rich Sutter back with you. Marky Mark, I think this is our last break of the evening. I may be wrong on that, but I think this is our last break of the evening. It is. Marky Mark's been doing a great job, Mark Harrison, of making sure that we've been behaving ourselves down here. Just a reminder, if you're coming down to the hockey game tonight, you're going to come into the celebration zone tonight or even this weekend, there are processes in place to get a safe ride home. MAD has a display here. They have cards to call a taxi, call a designated driver. Basically, you want to get home safe.
Absolutely. And
there was encouraging news from SGI this week that the number of impaired driving fatalities have gone down by almost a third from a year-to-year basis. So
that's awesome.
People may still be getting the message, but there are a lot that aren't still. But hopefully, if you're here this weekend and you're having some fun,
be wise.
Be wise, exactly. Your car is okay if it has a sleepover. Here at Everest Place.
Fine here.
Yeah, it will be just fine. Just make sure that everything's locked up and ready to go. Rich, the Bulldogs, the Pats tonight. I think it's going to be tough for the Regina Pats tonight. I think they can win this game, but you're right. I think Max Paddock has to be better than what he's been in the last two games that the Pats have played. He hasn't seemed himself, and I thought he was after the game against the Bulldogs the other night, but he seemed a little bit shaky to me. And that third period the other night where Swift Current just kept coming at them, you know, whereas if for 5 minutes left the other night against Acadie Bathurst, you think if there was another 5 minutes in that game to go, the Pats would have tied it. I think you could say the same thing about the Pats Swift Current game the other night as well.
You're right. But again, you know, he's a young guy. He's been through some ups and downs and probably hasn't played nearly as much as he should have this year and because of partially because of the injury. But the biggest thing is I still think it's all about the group around him. It's just not about him. There's five guys on the ice that play in front of him, and there were stops the other night where he maybe spit out some rebounds, maybe not to where he wanted to, but also there was poor net front coverage around the net by his defenseman. I thought they needed to do a better job of boxing out. But like I said as well, it's about puck management, and he's not the guy necessarily the only guy doing it.
Regardless of who wins tonight, can that team go and beat Acadie Bathurst in the final?
Well, you know, I think it's going to be tough, to be honest with you. I've watched this team practice the last couple days as well, just playing, and you just see what they play fast. They practice fast. There's so much skill. And the things that they worked on that I watched in practice was the details. And, you know, it's being harped on at them by the coaches. So they may be a team that you say, well, they're from the Quebec League, they score a ton of goals. This team also plays responsible hockey. And who's ever going to beat them and meet them on Sunday is going to have to play well of a game. And whoever wins tonight is probably going to have to play better on Sunday than they're playing tonight.
I had somebody tell me the other day here in the rink, you guys have been doing a hell of a job down here getting ready to go, but you haven't asked Rich all week about the Stanley Cup Final, and how do you think that's going to go? Well, Washington and Vegas starting Monday night. Is this Cinderella story going to be completed, or does Ovechkin win the cup?
Well, you know, I'm going to be very upfront about it. How can you not be a Vegas fan this time of the year? And me personally, you know, my My allegiance has obviously fallen Columbus, but the biggest thing is, you know, I get some real good friends in that team in Vegas, and I'm just absolutely tickled pink and thrilled for them. But my wife Rhonda said too, she goes, you know, you're scared about being so much success too soon. Like, you know, what's the encore going
to
be, right, moving forward next year? But
you
know,
got
hey,
nowhere
you know
to
what?
Go but down if
and,
you
and
lose.
They've earned it. I've said to you guys since day one when we started the show in October, after getting in there and seeing this team play and how fast they played, and they're not just a team of a bunch of misfits. They're a team of a bunch of real good hockey players. That's what they are, that are very well coached. They've got a Stanley Cup champion goaltender in front of them. Or behind them, that
go find a Red Deer Rustler.
That's
here.
The last resort, and you know. So, do I want to see the Vegas Golden Knights win? You better believe it, and I'll be thrilled if they do.
Getting back to the Memorial Cup, as we've got about 3 or 4 minutes to go before we wrap it up. It's been a great tournament, and as I said, I you know I don't get to the Memorial Cup every year. I try to watch this tournament as much as I can. I didn't watch hardly any of it last year because I was down in the States, but the Memorial Cup to me, being a guy that lives in Western Canada, the Memorial Cup obviously for many reasons is just a hockey event that you don't want to miss. And the hockey we have seen here this week has been tremendous. And you know, you take a look at what we saw last year, and, you know, we saw Matt Barzal and Ethan Bear with the Seattle Thunderbirds, and now they're in the NHL. We saw guys that will be in the NHL very soon, and we're seeing that here now. We've been treated in Regina the last couple of years to some great hockey at this time of year, and you just don't get a lot better than what we're seeing.
And I think we've been so fortunate to see, you know, with the exception of maybe one period in the Regina-Acadia game, the parity, just how close these teams have been, and really, you know, how close the Pats have been up to this point. So, you know, if you're a Regina Pat fan tonight, and if you are a true Western fan tonight, Western Hockey League fan, let's hope that the Regina Pats will live another couple days.
And I know we talked about this the other day, but the Western Hockey League representative, so Swift Current this year, not winning a game. They're winless in their last 10. Swift Current, of course, did get a tie that they lost in overtime to Acadia Bathurst, but the fact that the Western Hockey League's lost 10 straight games, is that something to be concerned about? Because to me, when you've got the parity in this league, I just think it's bad luck.
I think it's an anomaly. I don't believe it's bad luck at all. You know, a lot of things go on during games, a bounce here, a bounce there. It wasn't like these kids have been blown out of the rink on a lot of those nights as well. And it's, you know, one goalie doesn't maybe have such the night that you're hoping and expect them to have, and the other goal on the other end does do something that's kind of outworldly and is a difference maker. But you know what? I think I would be disappointed if I didn't see a real good game tonight. I will be disappointed if I don't see a cleaner game from the Pats, which is what they're going to have. And if they have that, they've got as great a shot as anybody to win this hockey game tonight and move on to Sunday.
I got to be honest. My first Pats game, 73. Gillies, Sobchuk, Stanowski, growing up, watching those teams play here, the Jock Callenders, the Dave Mikhailiks, the Garth Murrays, the Josh Hardings, the Jordan Eberleys, the Adam Brooks, and now the Sam Steeles. I'm as biased as can be now. I want the Pats to win this thing. I think it would be so great in here Sunday to see it. I don't know if it'll happen, but we had a great night on a Sunday night in 2013 when the Riders won the Grey Cup on their home soil. I don't know if the Pats can duplicate that. They've got to put in two strong efforts, but we'll find out. Rich, I have had so much fun with you here this week. This has been great. I love doing the Wednesday hit with you, but this has been great as we've talked about the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Thank you very much for all your work you put in for us this week.
You know, it's been great too. I've been absolutely thrilled to be in here, not just to watch the games and take in and watch the workouts with these kids, but also to spend the time with you guys here and all the guests we've had to be able to bring in and have some fun with them. And to, you know, to top it off with Colby and Paul tonight, it's been great. Thank you very much.
All right. When we come back, Les Lazaruk, Al Dumba. Oh, my God, they got Chad Mercier there. Is he going to be on with them? I don't know. But Les Lazaruk, Al Dumba, Kelly Rempel will be in here. The MasterCard Memorial Cup pregame show. And then
Phil Andrews, Jared Dumba. At 8 o'clock, we'll bring you the Pats and the Bulldogs. Are the Pats going to take on a Caddy Bathurst on Sunday? Or will it be Hamilton and a Caddy Bathurst? We will find out tonight. You've been listening to the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Have a great weekend, everyone.